goes to the fact that for decades now, Democrats have come to feel that if we are not going to win an election, there is no value in putting resources into that race. And that is patently false.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. In episode 18 of this podcast, I spoke with Jonathan at It Starts Today. He talked about his career in progressive politics and his new enterprise, which was attempting to provide a base level of funding to all Democratic congressional candidates. I caught up with him recently to hear about developments with It Starts Today and see how well he felt he'd proved his concept and what his plans are going forward. Jonathan, it turns out, added candidate funding in Missouri as a test of the model on a state level and is setting up a presidential nominee fund so that our nominee is not caught in an unfunded moment like Kerry was in 2004. So after a quick word from our sponsor, my update interview with Jonathan at It Starts Today.
Check out the large, detailed, and high-quality political data graphic posters from TimePlots. Our visual history of the American presidency, for example, lets you see the Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Trump presidencies in full context. TimePlots library includes visual histories of the United States House, the United States Senate, the Supreme Court, and the Democratic and Republican parties. Find them all at www.timeplots.com. Use the code BATTLEFIELD for a discount.
I last talked to you, Jonathan, in June of 2017.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
Tell me what happened since then. How are things going at It Starts Today?
The 2018 cycle was really great for us. This was us trying something brand new, and we did a really amazing thing. We raised $499,502.86 from 3,376 monthly donors. It was sort of an incredible validation of this idea that recurring donations directed not to a specific candidate, but to all the Democrats running for office. And we ran this project at both the congressional level, which was most of the money, and also in Missouri for the Missouri State Legislature to see how people responded to a state legislative project. It was an incredible validation of the concept. It's a very efficient way to raise money. You know, it cost us about $23.65 per donor, and each donor gave an average of $147 or $148 over the course of the cycle. When you're talking about recurring donations, it matters when you start. The sooner you start, the more those dollars piled up. And since we were acquiring folks over the course of the election, with new people signing up as late as early October of 2018, that overall average per donor is pretty darn impressive.
Do you use dollars that come in to acquire other donors? Because it seems like if you can spend $23 to get 100, it would make sense to spend a lot more.
Unfortunately, this is not a very simple pyramid scheme model. If it were, it would be wildly successful because, yes, we would have taken the $23, spent it, the person pays for themselves in a couple of months, and all of a sudden we take that profit and we go out and we get more donors. But because of what we're doing, which is raising money for every Democratic nominee, either for Congress or for the state legislature of Missouri, most of the money that comes to us is actually tied up in a way that we cannot legally touch. Either as a matter of, you know, our pledge to our donors and sort of contract law, or under the operation of federal campaign finance law. So unfortunately, we are in a position where the money that we have to invest in this has to come from outside donations or from the tips that people leave us. Every time someone makes, you know, starts a donation cycle, via It Starts Today, they are able to leave us a tip along with the money that they're giving to the other candidates. And that is for us to fund our project.
How much tip revenue did you end up with?
I've not actually run the total, but in the Missouri project, it was about $1.09 per month per subscriber. So about at peak, about $800 a month came in that way when we got to our peak of about 816 subscribers at that level. At the federal level, the number was a little lower. It averaged about 79 cents per month per donor. And while, you know, those are relatively small dollar amounts, you know, again, when you have a couple of thousand people doing it, it turns into a couple of thousand dollars a month in revenue. And while in this initial stage, that certainly was enough to cover our cost of acquisition, we raised donations for that. The other thing that this first cycle proof of concept test showed us was that at scale, this is an incredibly self-sustaining project. You know, we absolutely need investment to get to scale, but we have a revenue stream that comes from the fact that we're doing something that the subscribers believe in and they're willing to give us money as well as giving money to the nominees. And if we can get this at a state level to, you know, 15, 20, 25,000 people, or on a national level into the six figures, a few hundred thousand people, that would provide the revenue required for the small staff that you need to operate it. And more importantly, the dollars to continue to grow.
Jonathan, the math on this, let's talk about that for a second. Because if you're pulling in $500,000 and you divide that up into 500 some congressional districts, you're only talking about $1,000 a district. And that is unlikely to have any impact. How much do you need to be raising, therefore, to be having some real impact on a congressional election? I mean, even $10,000 per district is not a huge amount. And that would be multiplying, you know, that would be $5 million. So where are you trying to get this so that it would actually matter?
Congress is hard in terms of getting to a number that is going to impact individual races. So $50,000 is sort of the number in to me that would really start to change the dynamics in every even congressional race. That's enough to have yard signs. It's enough to have access to basic technology. It's enough to hire at least, you know, a couple of 22-year-olds who are committed and can sleep on a couch. It gives you a small staff. It gives you a small budget. It gives you pizza for volunteer nights. And that starts to professionalize campaigns. What we really want to see at the congressional level is more like $250,000 or $300,000.
When you project out, how long do you think, if things go well, it would take to get there?
To get to the congressional level, we're talking about needing to increase from 3,000 people into more like 300,000 people. And that's why, for us, the real project and the congressional one was valuable, and we learned a lot from it about how this works and what people respond to, and we're not going to give up on it. Because even injecting $1,000 into every race helps a lot of them. Like, we just got wonderful calls from people who are like, I thought no one was supporting me. It was great to get your checks. Those kinds of just wonderful feel-good messages from folks who are running in places that they're going to get clobbered. And they know it, but they think it's important that someone run. So it's not that $1,000 has no impact. It's that $1,000 isn't going to change, you know, and suddenly make a congressional race truly professional.
I understand the rationale for what you're doing. We talked about it at length in the previous interview. But if the idea was to have an impact on an unfunded race, another way to do that would be to take $100,000 five times and put it into five races that are certainly not funded. Then you would really immediately get to a change in several races.
Exactly. And that's one of the lessons that we learned from 2018. At the congressional level, funding 435 House races and 33 or 34 Senate races just divides contributions up too far. And again, at the congressional level, funded races have money. They have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. And they don't really need, it's not that they couldn't spend it well, but they don't really need an extra $50,000 or $100,000. And the, you know, high profile races that are raising several millions of dollars, they don't even really need a couple of hundred thousand dollars. Again, it's not that they couldn't spend it well. It's that money is not going to be the reason they win or lose most of those races. On the other hand, when you start talking about the unfunded races, you know, $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 really does make a difference. And one of the things that we've learned from what we did this cycle at the congressional level is that while there are very good public policy arguments in favor of fund every race, and there is an incredible opportunity for the Democratic Party as a whole to engage in privately financed public financing of elections, if the party institutions and the party leadership and all those folks with very big email lists were to decide, we actually want to fund every single congressional race, putting together the recurring donors is absolutely possible. But that's not something that we're going to build on our own. So one of the things that we're looking at for 2020 is focusing more on what we call the forgotten districts, those unfunded races, where you can just look at them and say, okay, what we're really interested in is the races that as of August 1st or as of Labor Day, what races don't have $300,000? Like they haven't hit that funding floor that we feel is what you should be putting into a congressional race to professionalize it, at least for the sprint to the finish. All those kinds of behaviors that result in more votes being cast, both in your race particular and overall in the country. And so we have developed a sophisticated campaign finance maneuver, an earmark that is conditioned on more than split my money evenly among every Democrat running. And it's much more focused on those races, the ones that don't have funding.
And when you do that, are you thinking about those races that don't have funding that have some marginal chance of winning?
That's really not what we're interested in. It's not that winning and losing elections isn't important. It is our fundamental goal is to elect Democrats. But that goal of funding wins and losses, that's what the DCCC is focused on. That's what the DSCC is focused on. That's what Swing Left is focused on. Flippable. You know, there's a lot of people at the state and federal level, you know, national party organizations, state party organizations, outside organizations who are focused on winning the winnable races. And that's not where Democrats really have a problem. We're actually quite good at funding those races. We don't always perfectly identify them, but we're really good at identifying them, actually. You know, if you think about all the possible races, failing to note one or two races that we might have been able to win, or funding three or four races that turned out to have been lost causes that we didn't know, that's a really good record for the strategists and the party committees and groups like Swing Left to identify places that we should be fighting. The problem that we've identified is deeper than that. It goes to the fact that for decades now, Democrats have come to feel that if we are not going to win an election, there is no value in putting resources into that race. And that is patently false. The argument is more clear when you start talking about state legislative races than when you simply talk about, you know, a couple of hundred congressional races.
And you were starting to talk about that with your Missouri project. Does the math work out better on the state legislative level because races are cheaper?
Yes. And, you know, state legislative races were always the sweet spot that we were aiming for. But, you know, we had to figure out the technology and law that would allow us to engage in the same kind of behavior that federal law makes very easy. So it took us a little while to do that. And we launched in Missouri in October of 2017. The math at the state legislative level is radically different than at a congressional level. A Missouri state legislative district is only 37,000-38,000 people, not 750,000-800,000 people. a campaign budget that really professionalizes a state legislative campaign is more like, in a state like Missouri, is more like $20,000 than $350,000. And so the numbers required to influence that election and the amount of money that's required to actually make a difference in a state legislative election is just much more manageable. And it means that instead of needing to talk about a couple of million monthly subscribers giving $10 a month the way you do to truly change how campaign finance works at the, you know, in every single congressional race across the country, you're talking about more like 19 or 20,000 people in a state like Missouri. And that's the place that we're currently operating our first state level project.
How did that go in 2018? How far along that road did you get?
So, you know, starting only a year out, we raised and distributed about $64,000 to Missouri state legislative candidates. It was about $280 for each state legislative campaign and over $1,000 for each of the state Senate races that happened. And unlike a congressional race where giving them, you know, $1,000 doesn't make much of a difference, you give a Missouri state Senate candidate $1,000, particularly in the less well-funded or unfunded, more rural districts. And that's game-changing. Even the $280 that we gave to a state legislative race, for folks who only had a campaign budget of $2,000, that was a 10% bump in what they had. One candidate wrote us and said, you know what I was able to do with the check that you sent me? I went out and I bought a laser printer, and that let me print out accurate door-knocking maps for my canvassers for the first time. And we actually had the ability to print it. And that resource where she was running was so valuable that actually the Democratic Party and the coordinated campaign were using her laser printer to print out their maps and their lists and things like that, because these are places that just haven't had resources for a decade or more. And that's where we start to see real change. And obviously we want to get from 800 subscribers to 20,000, but getting from 800 to 20,000 is a lot easier than getting from 3,000 to 3 million. Well, it's orders of magnitude easier. And that's why we've always been fascinated and most interested in sort of state legislative races as this sweet spot in American electoral politics, where fundamentally, it's still a matter of talking to voters face-to-face, knocking on doors. That's what has us most excited about what we did this cycle. The congressional stuff was good. This was, you know, potentially at scale game-changing.
It sounds like you're then committed to going forward, and looks like you've grown your staff some. How are you doing as an organization, and what are your plans going forward?
We're completely committed to going forward. We are doubling down on Missouri. We had a lot of great success. We built a lot of trust. We developed, and you know, I'm working with an incredible woman on the ground in Missouri, Michelle Hornish, who just crisscrossed the state and was seen everywhere and talked to hundreds and hundreds of people to turn into those 800 subscribers. They just elected a new party chair, so the state committee was meeting. And she had, you know, a couple of really, I thought, very valuable and somewhat enlightening conversations with folks where, you know, a county party chair came up to her during the meeting and said, you know, I really wasn't sure what you guys were when you came and spoke to us last year. I thought you were going to be here one and done and we'd never hear from you again, but you're back. Now I want to talk. The county party out in Kansas City, Jackson County, just invited us to come and speak to their next committee meeting. And it's not that they disliked us before, but now they understand that we did what we said we were going to do. We did $64,000 is a lot of money for a single entity to inject into Missouri politics. There's certainly a lot bigger ones, but there may be a couple of dozen of those that are bigger. Oh, and the other thing that's true about Missouri is we, because of the way we structured Missouri, all of those subscribers who started sometime in late 2017 or during the course of 2018 or in October of 2018, all of the subscribers are still giving. So the $64,000 that group of people we have already recruited and convinced of the value of what we're doing, know, the vast majority of them are still sticking around. And that $64,000 is already $150,000 for 2020. So we're already going to have a bigger, you know, impact next time than this time.
So what surprised you the most in 2018?
What surprised me the most in 2018 was the difficulty in convincing major funders to try this experiment.
That's somewhat in contrast to a few, like you mentioned, Swing Left. I mean, I think they raised like $8 million for their internal purposes.
Yep.
And there's something sexy about that model, I guess. You know, that's a combination of grassroots and larger donors. Somehow they caught the wave.
I think there are a few things. The first and most important is that Swing Left fits the conventional wisdom within the Democratic Party of what we need to do and how we win elections. Focus on swing districts. Now, because this was a wave year and because of the unpopularity of Donald Trump, that list of swing districts was wider than normal. 2016, it was in the range of 40 districts. This time it was somewhere between 80 and 100. The second thing I would say is that they just did a really good job of launching and marketing. They caught the energy at the right time with a really good idea. It's important when I sort of offer critiques of the way we do things that it's clear that I'm not critiquing either Swing Left specifically. I am just in awe of what they did and think that they, you know, contributed in a major way to the victories last month. But at the same time, the party as a whole or the political left has forgotten the value of losing an election to competing in places that you're not going to win right now and that you might not win for quite some time. Because elections don't happen in a vacuum. When you run for Congress, every voter you turn out is going to also vote in most, hopefully all, of the other elections they see on the ballot. When you vote in a state legislative race, you're voting for the congressional races and the gubernatorial races and the Senate races. You vote for everything that's on your ballot. And if the fundamental currency of elections is votes turned out, we need as many bites at that apple as possible. Turning out any voter to vote for a Democrat is likely to be a vote for all Democrats. And that's going to be particularly true looking up ballot, where voters are going to be more likely to be familiar with the candidates. And what we need as Democrats is we need qualified, passionate, progressive candidates running in every single election. And they don't need the financial resources of that top tier. If we get an extra 50 votes, we're going to win this thing. You know, those swing districts where every vote matters. It's not that those districts need the same kind of funding, but they do need enough funding that they're able to engage voters systematically. Simply being on the ballot isn't enough. Like, it's better than not having someone on the ballot. We need to make sure that we have candidates talking to voters in local terms about progressive issues, but in local terms. When we cede these electoral districts to Republicans, the only voice the voters hear is a Republican voice. And the story they tell of who Democrats are and what they want and what they're going to do is very different than the story we would tell about ourselves. And that's what we need to change. There was data out of the Virginia 2017 elections that showed that simply having a qualified Democrat on the ballot running for that office, and pretty much all the Virginia races had some level of funding in 2017, was worth an extra 550 votes to Ralph Northam.
So I think you do a good job of articulating this theory of politics, and I think it's pretty persuasive. And I wish you, you know, all the luck in kind of climbing up and scaling this enterprise. And I appreciate your efforts on it. Is there anything else you want to say?
The only other thing I wanted to talk about, if we can have the time, or maybe this is just an entirely different conversation for us, is to talk about the one project that we are running at the national level that we're really focusing on this cycle because we're doubling down on Missouri. But there is one thing that is happening on a national level that we feel we're pretty well positioned.
Now, tell me about that.
I will ask your indulgence because the story actually goes back to 2004. I was working at the Democratic National Committee in 2003 and 2004, and it was March, and John Kerry had just secured the nomination. He hadn't quite secured all the delegates he needed, but he was going to do so quite quickly. His opponents had conceded, and he was our nominee. And he was obviously physically exhausted, but also he had effectively no money in his campaign account. He had a couple of payrolls basically left because he had spent it all winning the nomination and was just bringing the money in and spending it. As soon as John Kerry secured the nomination, Karl Rove launched $50 million in advertisements on a national level framing the election. And the way he framed the election is that John Kerry is an out-of-touch, elitist flip-flopper. You can't count on him, and he's not like you. And John Kerry's campaign never really recovered from that. The Swift voting that we think about was built on that foundation. In April of 2004, John Kerry had no money to push back on those ads. The DNC tried. They went up with about $6 million of ads a couple of weeks after Rove started, you know, on behalf of Bush. And that really stuck with me. It is a motivating factor for what led to It Starts Today, this idea of raising money for the candidates to be determined. Because here's what we know. We know that Donald Trump has $90 million in the bank. We can project forward and we can assume that the Democratic nominee in April or May or June of 2020 is going to have effectively nothing because, well, we already know that there's going to be 15 or 18 or 20 of them running. And that really concerns us. And so we've launched on a national level a project that we call Dump Trump because we've actually been raising the money in very small amounts as an add-on to all of our donations starting in early 2017. But it is focused on ensuring that the presumptive Democratic nominee in 2020 has the tens of millions of dollars that they will need in basically gap financing. We would really love to cut a check for $50 million to the campaign and say, here's the money you need for the next 4 to 6 weeks, fight back. And by the end of that 4 to 6 weeks, the party, you know, the party funding operation will have rallied around our nominee and that money will have started to flow. But that takes time.
Is there any legal challenge to that?
No, actually, back in 2003, a group called We Lead went to the FEC and said, can we do exactly what I just described? Can we fundraise for a presumptive Democratic nominee? And the FEC said yes.
Is anyone else doing a nominee fund like that? Because obviously, there's a few of the other CrowdPAC type groups that have that capability.
I would be surprised if ActBlue doesn't have a 2020 presumptive Democratic nominee fund up on ActBlue, but I'm not aware of anyone who's fundraising in any significant way for it. CrowdPAC, we are up on CrowdPAC with a 2020 nominee CrowdPAC as well. I don't quite know Swing Left has sort of expanded their mission beyond, the U.S. House, and they're doing all the houses. So they're focusing on the Senate. They say they're going to be doing work around the White House, and then they also want to start doing some state legislative work. So for the White House, there is only one race.
Why should somebody contribute through your organization rather than directly to the campaign, to a state party, through ActBlue, through Swing Left, through... Why through yours?
Our focus is simply different than anyone else's. To answer the first question you asked, why not fund the campaigns? The answer is absolutely fund the campaigns. The problem is we're not going to know who those candidates are for well over a year. We're not going to have party primaries and all of that. So we're not going to know who exactly is running against the Republican in these races until then. And so absolutely, once we know who they are, find the candidates that you agree with most and give them money. We view what we do as insurance. Like, this is kind of, in addition to funding specific candidates that match your values most closely, you should be doing subscriptions through It Starts Today to ensure that every Democrat has funding everywhere. At scale, we really succeed. We're putting those $300,000-$400,000 into a congressional race. We're putting $20,000-$30,000 into state house races, $80,000-$90,000-$100,000 into state senate races. That's enough money that a really good candidate, a rock star like a Barack Obama or a Bill Clinton, an Elizabeth Warren kind of charismatic candidate, they could pull off an upset with that amount of money. But that's not really our primary goal. Our goal is to make sure that Democrats are contesting every single election, because that is how we build for the future. That is how we turn an R plus 12 district into an R plus 10, into an R plus 6, and eventually into a D. Electoral infrastructure is like a sandcastle. Yes, you can build it, but if you don't constantly maintain it, it washes away very, very quickly. And we need to make sure that those candidates have enough resources to run a professional campaign, which is not the same thing as enough resources to win a hotly contested, high-profile race. Those are two different things, but we're good at doing one, and we don't do the other at all.
I think that's a great note on which to end this conversation.
That was Jonathan at It Starts Today. He's at itstartstoday.com. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at resistancedashboard.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.